The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. From the College for Creative Studies, it's Professor Dave Chow.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Excellent. You know, it just hit me how the hue in the background of your watch matches your shirt perfectly.
Oh, okay. If you say so.
Did you do that on purpose?
No, no. This was the only clean shirt I had this morning, so.
I thought it was purposeful.
Yeah, sure. It wasn't standing in the corner, so I decided to wear it. So
That's true.
It works.
Saw something online a couple weeks ago. It's like top 10 things you figure out when you're in college. And the first thing on the list was, if it smells good, it's probably clean. Yeah. I was like, that describes a lot of my students, only they should probably do the second sniff and the third sniff sometimes, too. Professor Chuck Hokett is here.
Hello,
from ITS.
Happy Friday, TGIF.
Yes, TGIF to you,
yes,
sir.
Yes, it is.
I had a student level with me the day before my final in the fall, and I was asking questions because they were asking me questions, and I was asking questions back, Socratically. And they looked right at me dead in my eyes and said, I'm just going to level with you. I spent a solid hour and a half calculating the lowest score I need to get on your exam tomorrow to keep my letter grade. Let's talk about this reaction again.
Set the bar low.
Unbelievable. Professor Kendra Evans is here from Chemistry and Biochemistry.
Hello. Good to be here.
How are the night classes?
You mean evening classes.
Evening. The sun is out.
5:15 to 6:30. It's out maybe for a bit and then it's setting. But, you know, spring will come. They're very good. They're very good. I so much enjoy not teaching at 8 a.m. I can't describe it. I mean, my whole perspective on life is absolutely different than when I have two 8 a.m.s in 1 week and no 8 a.m.s. It is so beautiful. I could praise for a long time.
Because you actually sleep. Even with two small children, you actually get some sleep.
Yeah. But the 8 a.m., it's really vicious because I'm so worried that I might not wake up at the 5 a.m. that it's necessary for me to wake up that I actually have anxiety and sleep a little later. So at the end, I sleep like 1 to 5 or like 2:30 to 5 or something. And it's just miserable. I hate when I go to bed and I think it's so soon before I have to wake up. I hate that feeling.
I know.
Or I might miss the alarm or hit snooze too many times.
You know already what I'm going to say. I'm the exact opposite.
He
I cannot handle staying up late. I can't handle staying up past 10 o'clock.
Really, Matt, remember, once told us you wake up earlier than Jesus.
So, I think I said something like that. But what I meant was the cops and the paper boys and the bakers. We heard the tones of Professor Beth Oljar from philosophy. How's logic? Fun? Logical?
Yeah. It's good. Everybody's sort of keeping it light. There's lots of laughing and making fun of myself when I make a mistake. So
sure. You make mistakes?
You make fun?
I didn't
professors?
Know that. Mistakes.
Cut it out.
So, yeah. So far, so good. We're behind, but that's not because of them. It's because of my failure to properly predict how much time we would need for
a
particular segment of material. But whatever. We get through what we get through.
That's right. The tyranny of content has no reign here at UDM.
It's more logic than they had before they started.
That's true. Learning outcome achieved.
Done.
Badge earned or whatever. I'm trying to think of the Pokemon reference. This is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything, folks. If you stump the panel, you can win one of our prizes. And if you don't stump the panel, you can win one of our prizes. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp. You can tweet at us using @AskTheProfUDM or #AskTheProfUDM on Twitter, or find us on Facebook. It's another fantastic set of questions. You guys are going to love this, especially when it comes to this introduction to the esteemed professorial team. We're like the super friends. I listened to Ask the Professor starting somewhere in the late 70s, maybe early 80s, when Ed DeWitt was the host. Then marriage, kids, divorce, and life took over, and I kind of lost track and thought you were gone. I just recently heard you were still doing your thing over the web and had to connect again. Sorry to hear that a lot of the faculty family is no longer with us. You are still that straight-lace and button-down bunch that I always remember.
We are?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Here are some questions dealing with the life and times of one Henry Ford. There are 30 questions. They start real easy to build your confidence.
I went to his high school.
And get progressively harder. 70% passing score seems reasonable, so you're going to need to get 21 of 30. Good luck. Tony, W-O-J-N-A-R, Wojnar, or Weiner or something like that from Livonia, Michigan. That is super cool that you got back in touch with us, Tony. We're very, very thankful. My son is currently, my 11-year-old, is writing a report. They do this old switcheroo with the fifth graders, apparently. Every year at my son's grade school, you write a report as a biography, and then the switcheroo is now you need to give the biography dressed as the person, pretending like you're talking as you are that person. And he picked Henry Ford. My wife's rubbing her hands together working at the Henry Ford Museum. She's got pretty much all this stuff covered here. So, questions about the life and peculiarities. Ooh, that's a good
one. Well, yeah, it's kind of an unfair advantage, don't you think?
Is he going to say,
my mom works at the Henry Ford Museum?
Well, I was actually a little bit afraid knowing, having seen images of the students, because they take all these images of the students dressed,
which is cool.
In the past, which is kind of a cool way to do it. But sometimes students choose what could probably only be described as inappropriate figures from history that they wish to do a report on that they now need to emulate by dress. And things can get really interesting. I'm just going to leave it at that. Everything from, you know, Miguel Cabrera, who I guess is a famous person, to people around
to
Detroit.
Genghis Khan or somebody like that.
I will not utter any other names
no,
here.
No.
In what city of the United States of America was Henry Ford born?
Wasn't he born in Ohio somewhere?
It's not what it says.
Detroit.
Okay. Was not born in Detroit.
All right.
Is it Michigan?
Pittsburgh.
It was in Michigan. Yep.
Warren.
Flint.
Elmont.
No. Lansing. Gaylord.
Pontiac.
Lansing. Grand Rapids.
Clawson. No. It's
the metro area.
How shall I put this? The obvious choice.
The obvious choice is
Dearborn.
Detroit.
Yeah.
Dearborn, Michigan.
Oh, okay.
Is where Ford was born. His birthplace was an edifice at the intersection of Ford Road and Greenfield. Do you know what year he was born? This is actually pretty interesting. I know he's born on July 30th because they have a big to-do with the Henry Ford every year.
1875?
I'm going with 1870. It was 1863.
Okay, sure.
Near the end of the Civil War-ish. In what year did he pass away, and in what city?
Detroit?
Okay. Nope, he didn't pass away in Detroit.
Let's see, where would he have ended up?
Yeah, it was
1940 something? 50s.
You know, it says here, even though this has nothing to do with the year that he died, it was almost 1950. Starting in 1938, apparently he had stroke after stroke after stroke, but he lived another 11 years. He died in 47.
Wow.
But in what city?
Was it in Michigan?
Mm-hmm.
Grosse Pointe.
Not Grosse Pointe.
Dearborn.
You go for the obvious choice. It was Dearborn, Michigan.
Jeez.
It actually says here, he didn't stray too far, did he?
I don't think our confidence is being built.
Yeah, what confidence?
That's right.
You know, I love it when folks write in, thank you so much for doing this, Tony, with a little bit of extra, you know, information attached, because it allows us to kind of flesh the question out. But it says here, age 83, April 7th, 1947, there was a severe storm that knocked out power to his grand estate in Dearborn. Do you know what his estate's
Fair
name
Lane?
Is? Fairlane.
Yeah.
It says he left the world as he entered it, lit by candlelight and warmed by a fireplace. Kind of interesting. I'm sure that we've jumped all over the Fairlane question further down the list, but that's okay. Bonus points. As a boy, what did he say he liked to tinker with so much that it reportedly helped him get his first non-farm-related job?
Radios.
Engines.
Not radios,
bicycles.
Not engines. I could get you the exact thing by saying one word. How about if I said shinola?
Shoe polish?
Not shoe polish.
Oh. Shinola's at our school. Watches.
Watches, yes. He was very adept at repairing watches, starting at age 7.
Oh, I thought he was pickpocketing.
He really...
I'm good at stealing watches.
Oh, my gosh. Some immediate family members disagreed, though, saying he was fascinated by mechanical things in general. Watches were no more favored than anything else. That may be true, but I can tell you right now that my about-to-turn 7-year-old has never repaired anything mechanical. What was Henry's wife's name?
Estelle?
No. They were married 11 April 1888.
Oh, boy, Henrietta.
Henrietta.
Not Henrietta.
Henrietta, yeah.
Martha.
Martha's a good name, isn't it? I tell you, if you can get Martha. Real close to Martha, but not Martha.
Mary?
Mary?
Martha? Enid?
No, it was Clara. Clara
oh,
Jane
Clara,
Bryan.
Right. Yes, Clara.
Clara.
Mm-hmm.
They met at a local dance hall. Each enjoyed dancing to classic American country-type dances for the rest of their lives.
In Dearborn. Oh.
In Dearborn. Well, of course they
probably.
Everything was in Dearborn. No question about that. Where's the first house that Henry built? For the record, it says here it's a semi-trick question.
Dearborn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Rosedale.
Dearborn is correct. It's interesting.
We finally figured out that's the answer to a lot of these questions.
Everything is Dearborn.
Henry owned and operated a small sawmill when he married Clara. Clara drew the plans, and Henry built the home himself at the intersection of what is now Southfield and Ford Road in Dearborn, about a mile from where he was born. After moving to Detroit in 1891, they used it as a cottage, and then they gave it to a favored employee. The house was physically moved to a Detroit suburb in 1952 and placed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1980. It's still there. To what suburb was that house moved to?
Let me guess.
Dearborn.
No. It was in Dearborn.
It was in Dearborn.
So it needed
Dearborn
to go.
Heights.
No, it was a two-word. Two-word.
East Detroit.
Nope.
West Dearborn. West Detroit.
South
Dearborn.
It's a Detroit suburb. It's Garden City is where
Garden City. Sure.
Garden City.
Yeah. It's nearby.
Yeah.
Relatively. What is the name of the estate that he built, and where is it located? Okay, we got Fairlane. And it's
Dearborn.
Do you know where it is in Dearborn?
It's off of Michigan
and Southfield.
Yeah.
He built it specifically on a certain geographic thing, though.
A river?
Some crazy.
It's on the Rouge. Yep.
I was expecting some magnetic north-south vortex thing or ley lines or something like that. Yeah,
space. No, it says that if we were to build Fairlane in 2015, it would cost an equivalent of $40 million to build that home.
Do they have tours of it?
It's actually a banquet hall. And,
yeah, a friend of mine got married there. It's nice.
Oh. Exactly.
Very nice.
The coolest place is he had an in-ground stone, whether it was marble or concrete or whatever, pool, and they just basically filled it up with concrete and turned it into a dance hall.
Yeah.
You know, nice kind of interesting. Henry missed being the first to test a horseless carriage in Detroit by 3 months. Who is credited with the first car and when?
Benz?
No. For the record, it was an acquaintance of Ford. He testing his vehicles on the streets of Detroit, March of 1896. Henry's quadricycle made its debut in June of that year.
Chevy, Buick, one
Packard.
Of the
Chryslers.
Dodge Brothers.
I'm surprised
Brothers.
You guys don't know this.
Packard. Dodge Brothers.
No. Charles King was his name. Aww. Charles King. Yeah. Lost to history due to the aggressiveness of Mr. Henry Ford. What was the Ford automobile that made the company a powerhouse by 1908?
The Model T.
Yes. How many units did it sell in the first year for $21,600 each? Remember, 1908.
500.
No, 10,000 units at $21,000.
$21,000?
By 25, he was selling 2 million a year for, do you remember how much?
$500, wasn't it?
$3,500 is what it says here. But you're at the right order of magnitude as far as I'm concerned.
Is it a similar strategy they're doing with the Volt? It's starting really expensive. They're trying to bring down the cost.
Right, over time, right?
Yeah, but he paid his workers enough that they could buy them.
Yep.
When they came down to the 500.
I wouldn't be speaking to you today if it wasn't for my great-grandfather coming over for the $5 day, that's all I got to say. $5 week, sorry.
Can't have mass production without mass consumption.
Without people. What was Henry Ford's initial success? What first made him famous in the early world of the automobile?
The assembly line?
The assembly line. Yeah.
Everybody thinks that, but if my wife were here, she would quickly correct us, because he started getting into something when he was a young man that got him into car production.
Automation?
Not automation.
Engines, internal combustion engines.
Getting closer.
Carriage, bodies. And
probably the most related to the most famous automobile that the Henry Ford has, just because, ironically, in many ways, this predates consumer use of automobiles.
What, uniformity of parts and
the
swap?
The train, that big train, no.
No.
Most famous automobile?
The Winton is what they call it, the Winton automobile. In 1901, did
Never
something
heard of it.
Very, very important.
Ooh, sounds familiar.
Had a windshield? Yes. Was it enclosed?
No.
Yes.
I'll have to give it to you, because I find this one of the more fascinating things about the history of Rumble Seat. Yeah, that's actually a good choice. No, people were racing cars before they were driving them to transport themselves. People just made engines and stuck wheels on and went nuts. And he was into called performance racing long before consumer production. It's kind of a cool thing. Then it became consumer and then NASCAR. And that brings us to 2015. That is the short history of the universe. Who is Barney Oldfield, and why is he important to Henry Ford's success?
Was he a designer, or was he a test pilot or test driver?
You're exactly right. He was driving Henry Ford's massive 999 racing vehicle when Henry determined his personal driving skills or lack thereof would probably get him killed. Yes, the 999 was the fastest car of the day, substantially due to Oldfield's driving skills. For the record, he was a bicycle racer, Oldfield was, that became a car pilot. That car is
Well, it is the next logical step, I suppose.
Exactly. You've gone from two wheels to four.
That's right.
That thing is gigantic. It's like five or six pickup truck size engines on a tiny little race car. It's just insanity. And it's just, I don't even know how you would steer it. What did Henry Ford successfully challenge that essentially established the viability of the modern auto industry? This was the birth on paper to the $5 day or the $5 week or the thing that really brought the boom right to the table.
Well, he challenged labor unions. That's probably not what you mean.
Yeah, I think we're a little before that. In 1899.
How many hours you can work in a week?
What did he challenge? What was the rest of the question?
Challenge that essentially established the viability of the modern auto industry.
Anybody
remember George Selden? Does that ring any bells? I'm afraid we're going to have to do research on George Selden while we take a break. We are back with some fantastic questions. I'm sorry, I'm going to just mispronounce your name left and right, Tony. Tony Wagner, or Weiner from Livonia, Michigan. We're so happy to have you back in the fold. Continue to send us questions every day on the hour for the rest of your life. What did Henry Ford successfully challenge that essentially established the viability of the modern auto industry?
Infrastructure?
Something that developed the assembly line, right, and compartmentalization of labor?
Try this. In 1899, attorney George Selden, again, formed the Association of Licensed Automobile Manufacturers, claiming he had invented the automobile. What did Ford do?
Challenge the patent.
Fought the patent for 6 years, and he won. By 1911, the free auto industry was born, and Henry the Man began to take on legend status because it was just going to be this one dude who, if I remember my history book correctly, had really nothing to do with anything. He was just an attorney.
In the room, pretty much, yeah.
Making a company, which we would now call an LLC, that was just like, we are the only people who have the right to make an automobile. Name the three friends of his that formed his little gang of four that he called the Vagabonds.
Oh, they went the ones that went camping together?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Edison?
Oh.
Edison?
Yeah.
Thomas Edison. Henry Ford. Who else?
There's another car guy. Oh, Firestone.
Harvey Firestone. And John Burroughs. Ford met Edison very early in his adult life and always revered him. Henry's affinity for outdoor life drew him to naturalist Burroughs. I think he was like their sort of guide when they were out in the forest. My wife also has, with no disrespect meant to any of these historic figures, on pretty good going after handling many of these artifacts herself. I think that when we hear about hero worship, there's probably nothing that touched Henry Ford's worship of Thomas Edison. He said if he could have married him, he probably would have.
Don't they have supposedly his last breath?
Oh, yeah, they have Edison's last breath in a test
jar. Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, Henry Ford.
Okay, that's kind of creepy.
It's a little creepy. Yeah. Why would you want to breathe that anyway? You just had at least one molecule from Caesar's last breath in your last breath.
Yeah, but I mean, can you imagine, here's a man, his last gasp, and you're going to put a cup next to his mouth just so you can get... It's a little creepy.
I could see an analytical chemist doing that for GCMS measurements later.
Mm-hmm. Beth, what's the philosophical thing about, there's got to be something about
DNA
this.
DNA or something.
Yeah, he was going to clone him later.
Yeah, exactly.
You just never
know. Dual bulb.
We'll invent the light bulb again.
The light bulb.
Folks need to know that Thomas Edison grew up near Port Huron and was quite the chemist in the area, concluding with a American Chemical Society National Chemical Landmark being established at the Henry Ford this last fall, courtesy of the UDM Chem Club.
Cheers.
So big deal going up and down the train lines from Detroit to Port Huron. What was the pastime for which this group was most well known? You already said it, by the way.
Camping.
It's camping. Roughing it is what they called it, by the way, Professor Evans.
The Rough Riders.
Yeah,
isn't that just when you don't sleep with your own pillows?
Yeah.
Something like that. Actually, you're on the right track too, Beth. Yeah, because they took many camping trips that were specifically filmed and commercially distributed, showing Ford and his buds remained common people. Although it was not lost on many that common people used to not take servants with them on their roughing it trips. What other industry did Ford found using scraps from his Model T production?
The tri-motor? Airplanes?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it, but this was actually an entire industry that didn't exist with mass production of blank until he had leftover floorboards, made of wood from his Model Ts.
Boats. Bowling alleys.
Wood paneling for houses. I don't know.
Wood is the start.
Plywood?
We start hearing a lot of radio commercials and TV commercials about this sort of thing just about the end of April, transitioning into May around here.
Patios?
And it's made out of wood.
Decks.
Decking.
Not decks.
Shingles.
The weather is better, and so I feel like rolling out the grill and doing what?
Barbecuing?
Yeah, he founded the Ford Charcoal Company, which became Kingsford, using all the leftover floorboards from the car bodies and the Model Ts out of scrap wood, and he fired it, and it's like, now we can mass-produce charcoal in the early 20s. Yep. It bears his name to this day, Kingsford Company for Charcoal. Name the newspaper that Henry purchased and what made it so notorious. I think we probably know this one.
It was anti-Semitic.
It definitely was. Do you remember what it was called?
Detroit Times?
Nope.
One of those early ones.
It was named after a city that is very well known to be associated with Henry Ford.
Dearborn?
The Dearborn Independent. Yes, the Dearborn Independent. It was a general propaganda tool. And yes, there were two types of people in particular that... raised Henry's ire, and he published against them all the time. Jews and Catholics. That pretty much covers, yes. He was, Hitler recited Henry as an inspiration, awarded him the Grand Cross of the German Eagle in 1938. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was, we hear about this all the time. My home parish, Shrine of Little Flower, also had, sadly, an anti-Semitic historic figure as our founder. Mm-hmm. And that was always very odd that he and Henry Ford got along together because Father Coughlin was... very, very Catholic. So it doesn't make any sense.
But how weird that, his business is in Detroit, which has substantial Catholic and Jewish populations. Yeah.
He was an Irish Protestant and 33rd degree Mason. And it says, disliking both Catholics and Jews, as if that just comes with the territory. I don't know. I don't know anything about the Masons, frankly. Ford engineers attempted to update the Model T in 1912 and produced a prototype for review. What happened to that car?
Turn into the Model A?
Turn into a Mustang.
It almost became the Model A.
Henry Ford wanted to paint it blue. Oh.
No, I'm surprised you guys don't know this one. This is a classic Henry Ford as a very passionate man.
He named it after his wife.
He put in a second row of seats.
The way they talk about it, he walked around it once, and he was so incensed with the design, he tore the car to pieces by hand in front of the engineers that had put it together. He was very protective of the Model T and his own authority over design issues. It was 19 years later, 1927, that the Model A was introduced. So basically two decades just because he goes, touch my stuff.
Those are fun. We used to have one.
Beautiful,
that does
beautiful
not paint
car.
A nice picture.
No.
He's not necessarily a lovable guy.
No. Who is John Dahlinger? D-A-H, Dahlinger.
Is he a designer?
Yeah.
I can tell you that
is he an engineer?
Associated with the Ford Motor Company, but maybe not in the way you're thinking. He was a test driver for Henry Ford. And his wife, Evangeline, was a Ford stenographer. Any ideas?
Designer of the Ford Rotunda or something?
Didn't you just give us the answer? He was a test driver and...
Well,
something in addition.
What's his relation to Henry, I guess, is what we're getting at here.
Like a stepson?
Illegitimate son.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably Henry Ford's illegitimate son. Henry reportedly had an affair with the wife of one of the shady characters that populated the Ford Motor Company in the 20s. That's all it says. Meanwhile, John was born in 1923. How interesting. Mm-hmm. How very interesting. Those stenographers,
they get around. Yeah,
you gotta watch for them.
Fingers, you know.
I was gonna say, is that what I was trying to remember? Is that what a stenographer does? They type things up. What do they do?
take dictation.
Oh, dictation. So they were writing.
Shorthand.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sit in your lap and...
Yeah. I was thinking court stenographer. That's what I was thinking. Kind of a broad question. What did Henry Ford do during World War One?
Hang out with Kaiser?
Did he serve?
No, absolutely not.
Did he go
because
to Canada?
He was
a draft dodger?
Draft dodger.
Not a dodger, but
he's a rough rider.
Oh. Completely the other side of the number line. He wasn't just a draft dodger. He was
isolationist.
Well, he was a pacifist.
Oh, okay.
He was the one who funded and chartered the ill-fated peace ship in 1915 to convince European powers end this war. He was convinced that profitable industries would revitalize Europe. It was a complete and total failure.
Hmm.
Obviously, because WW1 happened.
The Great Disturbance.
Well, it had already started by 1915.
I think so.
I think
it was
a little late to the party.
Yeah.
I just picture something a little more 1960s when I hear it, like peace ship. Henry Ford does not jive with.
Henry Ford, the early hippie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. The first hippie.
Peace, right. Love, and metal cheese.
We've already heard this indirectly because of Henry and Clara's favorite hobby, but if you remember what that hobby was, what was interesting about Henry and Clara's hobby about being avid dancers?
She used to lead.
No, that's not what it says here.
They didn't dance together.
They always danced together, but they danced with a special set of other people.
Mannequins?
Mannequins. Dave, someone has to tell you this. Yeah. Mannequins are not people. Have anything to say about...
With the staff?
Yeah, he would require his managers to come, and he would teach them the steps. That's also going into creep territory. I'm just picturing... Yes, Henry would regularly take the hand of both execs and their spouses and personally teach them the old country-style steps.
Okay.
Was he a good instructor?
You know, I don't have any rating.
You could see I would come across as cool, though, if you were an employee.
At that time?
Yeah.
I think so. Oh, our boss cares for us. You know, that sort of thing. Though cool. I wouldn't say the white-collar class had developed at that point.
Going
yet, you know?
Henry's house to dance.
Yeah. Such a great study in dichotomies. Pure evil, pure good, up, down, left, right, industrial, and... Henry was always concerned about the welfare of the farming community. Those were his roots, after all. What work practice did he institute to help the farmer through the winter months in southeastern Michigan?
Storing grain?
Storing food?
Storing
freezing food?
No.
What practice did he develop?
It caught on at that time, but I'd say after...
Rotation of crops or
after
something?
After American Industrial Revolution, this really didn't matter that much anymore because people weren't being farmers much anymore.
Freezing their food?
Yeah, it was safe.
I mean, you could grow some winter wheat in Dearborn. I still see it on the side of the south field, but he needed to put them to work. So what do you think he would do? You guys remember village industry? Did you ever learn about that? He put a little spin-off factory on their farm... And tell them to go put parts together while it was cold. Mm. And then they were done, they could farm again when things got warm again. Mm-hmm. So they would always be productive is the idea.
Yep. Unemployed.
I feel the need to always be productive in telling you that we have to say goodbye now, unfortunately. Professor Oljar.
Goodbye.
Professor Evans.
Take care.
Professor Hokett.
Have a good evening.
Professor Chow.
See you.
And now these words from the University of Detroit Mercy.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter @AskTheProfessor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.